Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cleopatra was born closer to the opening of the first Pizza Hut than she was born to the building of the pyramid.
Yeah, she's from the Ptolemaic dynasty as well. She's like from like
that could just mean Pizza Hut. Could just mean Pizza Hut's really old. So I don't know.
that's
the classic Pizza Hut bias. Pizza Hut.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. That once you build the first Pizza Hut, you start seeing them everywhere, right?
Like, yeah.
Welcome back to the internet's number one fake history podcast. I'm your host, and this is the Lore Boys. With me, of course, as always, is James and Peter.
Hi, James.
Hi. And Peter.
You gotta introduce yourself too, Mr. Host.
Did I not say Ethan Palmer? I just said I'm your host. Yeah. I'm your host, Mr. Host. Host
the body of Christ in
the
person.
Host is host who hosts the most host. All right. Mm-hmm. We're talking Elder Scrolls 6. Hot goss. This is not a lore episode. This is a gossip episode because,
all right.
As you can tell from the subtitle, this is about the Hammerfell region.
XOXO, oh, cool. Lore Boys.
Which is where we assume 6 takes place, correct?
Which is the leading theory on where 6 takes place.
So, from the trailer we got like years ago at this point, right?
So it's not from the trailer. It's from one tweet is why we think Hammerfell. And the trailer might support it, might not. People did see the trailer and were thinking Hammerfell, but we got one other piece of info, which is, I will say, more convincing, I guess.
Was the supporting evidence just a tweet of a video of a hammer falling?
Yeah, okay. So that's a great guess, and we'll get into why that's a great guess when we get into the actual lore. Before we get to all that stuff, a little bit of housekeeping, I guess. I don't know if we have any new patrons, Peter, but we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys.
We do have 2 new patrons, actually.
With the show financially, and get a shout out at the top of the episode by our great co-host, Peter O'Donohue, over here.
Hi, welcome to absolutely fantastic names. I want to add a tier, or I just want to add a rule to, unless your name isn't Rad, you don't support us.
I don't know what it is, but all our patrons have very cool names.
Yeah, dude, I hope you're a DJ or a pimp, Keegan Diamond, as and then also another one, Yoni Davis, which is like just another fantastic name. But yeah, thank you both.
Keegan Diamond makes me think that you could make like a diamond in your butt, because it sounds like Kegel.
Kegel Diamond. Thank you to Kegel Diamond, new
Kegel Diamonds.
Thank you to Kegel Diamond, new patron and former patron now.
That does sound like a product that like Gwyneth Paltrow would sell on Goop, though.
Yeah, the Kegel Diamond.
Yeah. Yeah. Kegel Diamond, yeah. Because I know she does sell like some kind of egg that you're supposed to like hold in your pussy to make your like abdominal muscles stronger. So that's the next one. She's got the jade egg, and now we're gonna have the Kegel Diamond.
And Keegan Diamond, you have to tell us if you're Gwyneth Paltrow, legally speaking.
Whoever he is, he sounds very tight butthole. I'm a big fan. Yeah.
we're there for that.
Yeah.
For any new listeners to the show, coming here for some good old Elder Scrolls lore, we do have more of the stuff. You don't need to listen to those episodes before you listen to this episode, though some of them might be informative. That said, they should all be linked in the description below if you're keen on hearing about it. If you like Elder Scrolls lore, I guess, which we all do. We've talked about it before, but I guess we can start the episode talking about it again. Our kind of experiences, I started my Elder Scrolls love with Oblivion and then played Skyrim, and I'm a huge fan of the quote-unquote series, but I've played 2 of the games, essentially. Okay. which I think Jamie has a similar-ish level of experience.
Yeah, I watched you play Oblivion the farm, and I've played Skyrim a lot. So that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I played Oblivion, which is the fourth, and then I went backwards and played Morrowind, which I still think is my favorite, head and shoulders, personally. Even though it the gameplay is very difficult to recommend to like people with eyes. So yeah.
I recently bought Morrowind. I say recently, probably like in the last year or something.
You modded
but
it.
I've never played it because I'm like too scared of the shitty roll system. And I tried to get mods for it, but it was just like a huge pain to get a bunch of them working. And the mod community for Morrowind's like pretty dead, except
it's
for
a 20-year-old game. So yeah,
except for horny mods. There's still regularly every day. There's a new like big booby Argonian mod released, you know, new textures on Argonian nipples is released single day. But none of it. So you have to sort through so much like NSFW mods just to get to like make gameplay not terrible.
Is it just like one sweaty dude who's like so probably overworked?
That,
exactly. So you don't need to mod it for the roll system because the skill level 0 to 100 is your chance to hit. So if you just use a console like player.setSkillSword100, you will skip the roll chance.
Okay.
So you don't You don't need to mod your hit chance. You can, if you're gonna cheat, you can just open the console basically to set it. That's how I would grind out my armor stats in Morrowind. Is I would like player.set health 1,000,000, aggro a bunch of enemies, and then like leave my house and just have them hit me constantly. And then when I got home, I'd level up. And I definitely told this story before, but to max out sneak, I went into like a mine early in the game, and then there's no crouch toggle in Morrowind. So I weighed down the control button with a tape measure, and I went to a party, and I was just sneaking behind a guy, and then my skill was increasing while I was like idling basically and leveling up my sneak skill.
Nice.
And that's an easy way to get early levels in the game, is to just cheese the very rudimentary AI.
Yeah. You can do the same in Oblivion, but there is an auto run. It was I played on Xbox originally, and it was click the left joystick was auto run
for like the athletic skill,
or the sneak skill. You could just like point your character into a corner, like sneak into a shop, point your character into a corner, and like the NPCs, like some NPCs just like would never move to see you, but they'd always be like near enough that you're generating experience, and you just like leave your controller.
Nice.
You definitely have told that story before, and that very much is like old school exploits. And I'm sure the last time you told the story, I told the story about playing like The Sims 1. I would leave, you know, you enter the Rosebud cheat code, which generates money, but it's like 1,000 simoleons at a time, and you just have to like hold the enter key. So I would leave a CD on the on my corner enter key, like on the old keyboards,
the numpad keyboards, one, right?
They have the numpad enter on the very right bottom corner or whatever, and just leave that, and then just like go downstairs and watch a movie, and then come back up and have so many simoleons that the entire computer would lag, like you could. Everything on the computer would be operating so slow.
I want to tell a story about me and my stepbrother doing that with Tony Hawk Pro Skater, but I'm sure I did the last time. We're just a bunch of old folks telling the same stories.
Yeah.
With the console thing, I wanted to say something real quick. It happened to me this week in New Vegas. I opened the console by accident. I didn't know it was the tilde key. So I'm like, where the fuck? So I'm like trying to press all the buttons. And then I'm like, okay, well, maybe I could just use a console command to get out of the console, right? So I type exit, the whole game just closes. Like, fuck.
That's so funny. Elder Scrolls 1 and 2 are also free and have been for years. I've played both of those. And then all of them, including the weird spinoff Redguard, are all on Game Pass. So I've played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I've only finished 3, 4, 5. Because, like I was saying before the show, Daggerfall is too hard. I could not get out of the dungeon. And Arena is too old. I just can't do it.
I just realized, is there a location for all tools that are falling? Like, you got Hammerfall, we got Daggerfall. We got like Forkfall, Spoonfall. Yeah.
Forkfall, Screwdriverfall.
It's
Hammerfell, isn't it? It's past tense.
Oh, so.
Yeah.
Spoon will fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hammerfell, responding to your assertion that it's all from that 6-second trailer at at E3 2019, I think, 2018 maybe.
Their preemptive apology for Fallout 76 trailer,
yeah.
You mean?
Yeah, exactly. Hammerfell as the setting for Elder Scrolls 6 is mostly based on the idea that it is going to be the setting is mostly based on a single tweet which came out on New Year's Eve 2020, where the @Elder Scrolls account tweeted a picture of the map of Skyrim panned to the southwest, so where the Hammerfell region kind of is, with a candle over the region of Hammerfell and the text "Transcribe the past and map the future." So look, okay. Essentially it's like 2/3 of Skyrim, and then the only other region that you can see is Hammerfell, and there's like a candle on the map on the Hammerfell region.
Okay,
so cool. Not much to go on, but it'd be like a really like gotcha kind of tweet if it wasn't in Hammerfell. It'd be like, why the fuck did you tweet this one specific picture? I guess
I have been to Hammerfell. Cool. I think in ESO, I think you can visit it a little bit.
You can go. You can go so many. I was like, obviously doing the research today. Like,
yeah,
there's so many places that exist in games only in ESO.
Yeah.
Like we're gonna talk about Orismar, the
Elder Scrolls Online, the MMO, if anyone's unfamiliar.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I've always wanted to play it, but I know I like in my heart of hearts I know I wouldn't like it. But yep. Like the fact that there's so much map. And they just had their most recent season or expansion is like is a Breton based one. The Bretons being the race native to Hammerfell.
Dude, I loved it. I would play with two friends and we would just hop on PS4 and run dungeons together, do like the huge map PvP, like save up all these parts, build a catapult and like storm this fucking dungeon and stuff. And like,
that's pretty dope.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff in ESO, but you have to be okay with MMO stuff. And
yeah,
they are kind of like a little bit of scummy on the MMO side. Like you can't, your horse can't run as fast as other people unless you have the paid subscription and like, because you have to give like
what?
Yeah, stuff like that, which is like, okay, I get it. Like other MMOs have whole ass subscriptions and you don't, and you can just play, but you do have to buy the game at like $80 at the beginning or whatever it was back then. So
it's but buying the game at $80 doesn't sustain an MMO. Like you can't release regular content updates, which an MMO needs to stay alive. Yeah. You can't release regular content updates with a one-time purchase. So, like,
I think there might be a way around the horse thing, but it takes like months. Like once per week, you could get a carrot that increases your speed by like 1.5%, or you could just like pay the $6 and then just be the fastest right away, kind of thing.
Yeah. Again, like Jamie, you say you like ESO, Elder Scrolls Online. I'm fine with anybody who does. Like Peter, I'm like, I know I won't, you know, I know it'll be too grindy. It'll be too much an MMO. I won't have the time. I won't put the time into it. So like, why
lots
am I going to
get
it?
Juicy morsels of lore in there though.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I've enjoyed, it was really cool to see like, Orsinium, obviously looking it up, you see pictures. It is a location in, ESO, right? Where it's, you know, destroyed in the Elder Scrolls lore, and we never really go. You go to High Rock in Daggerfall, obviously, because Daggerfall is in High Rock, but you never really go to see the capital, quote unquote, city of the orcs.
Right. Yeah.
Which we'll get to.
I kind of wanted to play Guild Wars 2 as well because they gave that away for free, and after I kind of ran out of Warframe content, I just wanted a time sink and a. I dated a girl who fucking loved Guild Wars.
I couldn't get into it.
I was always kind of tempted by it. Yeah, I mean, I didn't install it. I was just like, damn, I really need a time sink here right now. And it just never pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
But they gave it away for free, so I have it on Steam and just like haven't looked into it yet.
I don't know why, but I really, it bounced right off of it. I love like I love MMOs, but Guild Wars 2 I couldn't get into. And I've watched a lot of gameplay. It looks fine, but
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I went through a period where I tried a few, but anyway, we're not talking about this. Isn't the MMO podcast?
This is the ESO.
Podcast. So, so I guess to start, we're going to talk about the history. We're going to talk about the first era and the second era primarily. If you guys want to hear about the third and fourth eras in Hammerfell, let us know. You can join the Discord. Let me know there, or you can tweet at us or DM us on Twitter at Loreboys if you guys are interested, and I'll look at doing a part three and a part four. I found not a part three and a part four, excuse me, a third or fourth year episode, so part two between those two. I reading through the timeline, a lot of it seems like it's more modern history in the game, so a lot of it is like sourced from in-game books, like a lot of Elder Scrolls lore is.
Yeah.
Whereas most of, I'm going to say 95% of what we're going to talk about today is from two books, the Pocket Guide to the Empire, first edition and third edition. The first edition was released with Daggerfall. It was like a physical book that was released with Daggerfall.
Whoa.
The third edition was released with Oblivion. Again, a physical book that was released with Oblivion. That said, there seems to be no second edition. Like, it seems like they reference a second edition at time, but there seems to be no existing second edition. Which
we
is
are the second edition.
We are the second edition. Yeah, so most of this content comes from those books, which is like really fleshed out, whereas a lot of the third and fourth era stuff comes from in-game books, which aren't super fleshed out. There's a ton of them, and there's a ton of lore you can get, kind of like Dark Souls lore, where it's like you can piece together a larger story based on these disparate pieces of information rather right. than one concentrated yeah. info dump. Right. But what that ends up with the third and fourth era that I found was it's a lot of like, this battle took place on this date, and this battle took place on this date, and then this person was born on this date, you know?
Right.
So I think the first and second age are the more interesting ones. But if you guys, again, want to hear more about Hammerfell specifically, then crunch at us on Discord or Twitter.
If you love birthdays, we'll tell you about them.
True.
Sure.
Yeah. If you want to hear birthdays and death days when battles take place. And,
when was Uriel born? Uriel Septim.
I don't know. Truthfully, I'm not sure. So to start, before we get into the first era, we'll talk about, I guess, what the fuck Hammerfell is for fans of the series who don't really know.
Skyrim cold, Hammerfell hot.
Yeah, I mean, they share a border, right? Like they which is like funny. It's funny when you think about Hammerfell being situated where it is on a map of Tamriel, because it's clearly that like latitude lines just don't exist in Tamriel, right? Like that's not how climate works there, which is fine and fair. It's a fantasy world. Maybe it's not a sphere. Maybe it is actually a flat earth. And
do we have any like deserts that like neighbor like frosty temp? Like, is there like a desert, a cold desert?
There's a desert in British Columbia, dude, in Canada.
Really?
Yeah, there's the Alberta Badlands. It's because the Rocky Mountains trap a lot of moisture, I think. So yeah. There's the climate. Desert, yeah.
Rocky deserts Mountains are the actually quicker picker-upper.
Yeah. To be a desert. I mean, the world's largest desert is Antarctica, right?
Yeah.
It's a measure of dryness, not temperature at all.
Precipitation, yeah.
Yeah. Typically, you know, the typical deserts, am I right? are typically warm, and I think it's probably something to do with hot make water evaporate.
Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure.
Another weird thing between like dryness and temperature, did you know when you're like touching water, you're not feeling the wet, you're like feeling the temperature difference from your skin? So it's like feels like cold.
Do we have to get into it? Is water wet discussion?
I didn't. That's not what I meant. But anyways, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it would depend on the mountain line. So, like, a changing climate would make sense. Because I'm looking at a map of Nirn right now. The thing with High Rock is it's, like, super fucking coastal. Like, most of the province appears to be...
Well, it's like, a big peninsula is High Rock.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like, most of the province... Yeah, sorry, Hammerfell and High Rock, I got mixed up there earlier. But, like, High Rock is, like, mostly coastline. So it would probably be quite humid in comparison, but it is like, yeah, like parallel with Skyrim, which is an icy wasteland, right? So
And Hammerfell, like I just said, it was hot, but it is like straight up desert area, right? Like
it's the Elder Scrolls version of not quite North Africa, I think. It's like Algeria and Morocco.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a bit. It does have a couple different biomes, which we'll get into. So. First off, it's inhabited by Red Guards, which is a playable race. Or when you're doing your character creation in the Elder Scrolls games, you can play as a Red Guard. They're a race of humans who hail from a different continent. They don't hail from Tamriel. They hail from the continent known as Yokuda,
okay.
Also known as the Lost Continent. Red Guards are considered fierce warriors with a hardy physique. They're natural-born warriors, whose name comes from a corruption of the Yokuden term Ragada, meaning warrior wave.
Oh, so, I thought Redguard came from all the sunscreen that they needed in Hammerfell.
They guard the red of the red sun.
Yeah. They're the black race, though.
Yeah. Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
the Red Guards are.
That makes sense. I guess,
that's why they're the North African guy. It's like the North African country, basically, right?
Yeah. Oh. They're definitely African in design, I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a paragraph here. I'll skip one to go to that. So they're black. Michael Kirkbride, who worked on writing lore design from Daggerfall through Oblivion, including the action adventure game, The Elder Scrolls Adventures: Redguard, claims he was inspired by the Black Panthers when creating the Redguards or writing about the Redguards and the idea of Black Imperialism, which makes me think he didn't know the Black Panthers very well because they were explicitly anti-imperialist and they heavily protested the Vietnam War and...
He may have been more inspired by the richest king in history, who was some sort of North African king who had all the gold somewhere, right?
Yeah, he's one of the leaders in Civ, I think. I'm trying to remember his name. But yeah, adjusted for inflation, he's by far $400 trillion or something like that, worth everything. But yeah, so
Mansa Musa,
yeah. Also a periphery zone, which is good. But yeah, so just very much a white guy writing black characters in the 90s, right? I was inspired by the Black Panthers. What if they were just white people? Okay. I don't know why you went that way with it, but sure.
I mean, at least he put black people in. Looking at you, Tolkien.
No. Maybe he was more inspired by Wakanda, which is a weird isolationist kingdom from Black Panther, right?
Yeah, I'm could be.
Who knows? If you're out there, dude, and you wrote the lore behind this, crunch at us.
So the Red Guard or Yokiden culture is pretty martial. Not everyone, not just the men, but the women and children too, is schooled in fisticuffs from a young age. So. Basically, part of PE is fencing, I guess.
Okay, cool.
If the kids were wearing pads and stuff, that'd be fun to watch. As long as I know there's no kids getting hurt, watching two kids just trying to knock each other on the ass is pretty funny.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They have no equilibrium.
Yeah.
You gotta love watching a kid fall down every now and then.
Yeah, exactly.
Plural things.
Small joys.
So it might be hard on people to live your whole life being kind of having that training combat doctrine drilled into you, but it has led to Hammerfell never being conquered by an invading force since the Yokudans arrived. With that, never being conquered, there's an asterisk there which we'll get to later.
Until except the first time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
and then why it never happened after that, we'll get into a bit later.
Okay. Yeah.
But there were people who tried. Tiber Septim tried. The Aldmeri Dominion tried.
What about all these demons and angels we have in this world, too? Couldn't they try?
Oblivion definitely tried, yeah.
Oblivion would have tried. Oblivion technically tried everywhere, though, so...
Yeah.
They failed everywhere. And they concentrated on Cyrodiil because they wanted to get Martin Septim.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which they did in the end, I guess. But also failed in the other stuff. So the Red Guards, hailing from that distant continent, bring their own religion to the table. They worship the Yokudan pantheon instead of the traditional gods of Tamriel.
Nine Divines is a traditional one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Though there are plenty of parallels. So the Sakatal, for example, is the Yokudan god of everything. He merges the concepts of Anu and Padme, the two executive gods who created the beings like Anuiel and Sithith. Listen to our, I think, very first ever Elder Scrolls episode, the creation myth.
Yeah.
I talk a lot about Anu and Padme, and it's the forces of light and dark in the universe.
That was recorded in my apartment. How long ago was that? Holy.
For sure. I don't know if we had three mics at the time. We might have still been rocking two mics, but I think we had three at the time.
Hey, look, if you're going to go back and play old Elder Scrolls games, which you should, there's a warning. It's just like, hey, the quality might not be what you're used to. Same if you're going to listen to one of our old episodes.
Yeah. We need the modding community to step up to fix our old episodes.
Yeah.
And give me massive boobs.
Yeah, exactly. We did a big. There's just one guy that keeps releasing like every 6 months. It's a big titty Ethan mod, and I don't know why.
I'm not complaining, but I don't know why. So Sakatal also mimics the very well known in popular culture Alduin World Eater.
Yes.
Sakatal is said to devour the world at the end of time before birthing it anew and restarting the cycle, which is a pretty common concept in Elder Scrolls mythos, especially
it's
with
the plot of Skyrim is to stop that from happening, right?
Yeah. You know, like it's happened forever for all eternity and will still happen. You don't stop it from happening, you delay it from happening.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I love that ending. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kick the can down the road the moral of Skyrim, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Skyrim in Skyrim you basically just play Al Gore and the entire thing is like fantasy inconvenient truth. It's just like, I don't know, I don't fix anything, but delayed it a bit.
Don't you go back in time and then realize that you are like they just kicked the can to you basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where you get the shout that you need to make dragons land, I think.
Right.
Yeah, force them to the ground. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah, it's you go back in time to confront a previous Al Gore who had a different the exact same warning.
Oh man. Yeah. And then when you do the dragon, I remember I was playing in VR and you have to go up into like there's a balcony area in one of the like Thane's back the back of their castle or whatever.
Yeah. In Jarl Whiterun.
Baldruf.
Yeah. And I had to call down a dragon that's flying by. And for whatever reason, he like came down and he grabbed a dude and like flipped him into the air. And in VR, I just saw the guy next to me like, like going flying into the air and then come down and smash. And it was so funny.
Amazing. So yeah, if you want to hear more about, I guess the gods specifically, we have an episode on them. But just know that the Red Guards they worship their own pantheon. It's not a 1-to-1. There is some crossover, but they do seem to have a unique system of worship.
A lot of classical mythology has that. Like, there's a lot of parallels between Christianity and Egypt and Greek and Roman, and despite the like some differences between all of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have a book on the it's like all the constellations or a lot of the more popular constellations, and it tells you the classic like myths that are tied to those constellations.
Cool.
Okay.
And there's one that's that talks about in Iraq, in ancient Iraq, like Mesopotamia basically. There was this myth of the gods were hanging out in the city, and they decided to epically prank the mortals and bring a massive flood, but one of the gods like liked one of the mortals and tipped him off, and so he built a big ark and like brought everybody from the city onto the ark. And it's like,
okay,
oh,
yeah,
this sounds like a fucking familiar story, huh? But like totally unique to Christianity.
I like when they modded the stars to have the big titty Ethan, the big nipper.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, I was like, I like the Big Titty Noah mod, but that's even better.
Can we get a Big Titty Noah as episode art this week, huh, Pete?
Oh,
big Titty
Noah
with a bunch of Big Titty animals. Big Titty Giraffe.
I don't think we have any Big Titty things, so that we need at least one for the emotes, right? We need a booba.
I mean, yeah, but like, it's because when I draw like some of the female characters like Leliana and whatnot from like Magic, primarily, is I try to be respectful.
Of course.
Where are her organs?
I do appreciate it, but you don't have to be respectful with Noah, dude.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
The guy lived over 1,000 years. Like, he's seen it all, am I right? So anyway, Hammerfell itself ranges from tropical to arid, and features a wide range of Minecraft biomes like jungle, desert, mountain, grassland. One of the most notable locations that Jamie called out in Hammerfell is the desert, known as the Al'Kir Desert. It takes up a huge swath of the country's western edge and is one of the most hostile and inhospitable places in all of Tamriel.
I posted a picture in the boys. It looks fucking badass. There's like castles and like big swooping rock arches and vultures and people wearing like stuff over their heads to protect themselves from the sun on horses.
Yeah.
And
I love like Arab fantasy. I love that style. I love the headgear, like the Red Guards in Skyrim. You often see them wearing, it's not a turban, but it's like the white hood with the black belt around the top there. Love that shit.
Exactly.
All that like style,
like you called out, Peter, it's very North African, like very Sahara.
Yeah,
very like these people who are driven to surviving in the desert, right?
They call all the white guys my friend, obviously, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we could dive into the history. So the furthest point of Hammerfell at the end of the Al'Akir Desert was originally known as Helgoth, or Deathlands, for its unforgiving climate, and also, once upon a time, the variety of deadly monsters known to wander the wastes. So at the start of time, basically nobody lived there other than monsters and beast men. So the first to settle these so-called Deathlands were, of course, the Dwemer.
Dwemer, cool. Guys, what's a fantasy? What's a fantasy monster that doesn't exist that you just make up? Off the top of my head, I was like, what kind of monster? I was like, what about a crocodile? But instead of legs, he's got race car wheels on the side, and he goes real fast.
Okay, that's a pretty cool one.
It's not a monster. It's like a Digimon, basically. Like...
okay, what does the Mon in Digimon stand for?
I know.
Jesus Christ. Digimon lore can't come soon enough because this guy is embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's got to clearly fix my fucking perception of it, right? Jamie.
But, yeah, Go-Gator Mon. What would he be? I don't know.
I'm going to say a giraffe with like a spring for a neck so that it could get around. It would escape predators by flipping onto its face and then like springing away from them at high velocities.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Can that be? Can we have a big booba spring giraffe on the
Yeah, of course. Someone's gonna look at that picture and be like, "Elder Scrolls lore. What the fuck am I looking at?"
Okay, so these all exist out in the Deathlands, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, various species of hostile big titty monsters.
Yeah, exactly. The first to settle these big titty wheel crocodiles and spring giraffe. the first to settle these so-called Deathlands were the Dwemer. Listen to our Morrowind episode if you want to learn a lot about the Dwemer. We talk about them.
Yeah, it's still one of my favorite artworks, too. And one of my favorite episodes to put together was the one on the Dwemer.
Yep. Yeah. It was specifically the Dwemer of the Rorkan clan. They left their home in Morrowind after their kin formed the First Council and allied themselves with the Kimmer.
Okay.
So, again, we talk all about that. The War of the First Council, the Battle of... the year 700, Battle of Red Mountain, I believe it is, when they disappear.
Because we talk about, like, the Nerevar, who is pivotal in that, the Tribunal, like, Vivek and Almalexia, shit like that, yeah.
There's a link in the description of this episode, so check it out if you're interested. As legend has it, in the West, however, the leader of the Rorkan hefted his hammer, Volendrung, which is a hammer you can get in all of the games, tossed it across the continent, over Skyrim and Cyrodiil. You guys see where I'm going?
Hammerfell.
Rorkan followed it to its destination, and where they found it crashed into the earth, built Volenfell, which translates to the City of the Hammer, and would eventually become Hammerfell.
Good job, Pete, because I was like, hammer throw? I don't know.
I love it because you mentioned it earlier. Like everything, there's places where everything's dropping or whatever. You know,
you're the one who said spoon will fall.
Sorry, I was just still stuck on the crocomobile. I was just trying to get it right.
I am a fan of the name. Can we call it crocomobile though?
Yeah, that could work.
It'd be a crocomobile. It'd be like a crocomobile, right?
Yeah. So that's the legend. Volendrung throws it. They build Volenfell, where his hammer apparently landed. I like to think they walked across the continent. He got fed up, threw his hammer 15 feet ahead of him, and said, like, yeah, there. That's
like Jebediah Springfield, basically. He's just like the shittiest like pilgrim.
So settlement was first completed in the first era, circa 420, baby. Became the city of Volenfell, and the city of Volenfell became the capital of what were known as the Western Dwemer. So a Dwemer who didn't live in Morrowind, essentially.
Yeah.
When the Battle of Red Mountain took place in the year 700 of the first era, the Dwemer vanished. Again, listen to our Morrowind episode, including the Western Dwemer. So what happened there in the Battle of Red Mountain, even being across the continent, seems did not spare you the fate of the rest of the Dwemer, and they all... like, with a click of the fingers, disappeared.
The entire race, except one guy, because he was outside of the universe.
Exactly.
That episode is fucking crazy. I love it.
Yeah, it's a great one. So Falmer, the ravages of nature, and the savage beasts held at bay by the Dwemer, slowly began to recapture the rotting settlements.
Do you think they made, like, a satisfying, like, cartoon, like, pop when they
Discord cuts it out, but I'll do it for the audacity.
Thank you. Yeah, like something like that. Like you've got a guy fighting a crocodile with wheels with like a dwarven hammer, and then just like swings up, and then just just like out of existence, just like.
I honestly hope that it wasn't that sudden. Like I hope it was almost that sudden in that a Dwemer swings his raises Warhammer to swing it and then pauses and has the understanding, like the very mortal understanding that something's about to happen. And there's just like white noise like fading in and then the pop.
You know what I mean?
And like they all have this moment of realization where they know something's wrong and then they disappear.
Wow.
So it's over a century later, after the Dwemer just vanished, that the Ra Gada would arrive from distant Yokuda in 808 of the first era.
Okay.
They're fleeing destruction, which had taken place in their homeland. The Ra Gada make quick work of conquering the Bretons, Imperials, and the Beastfolk who had tried to stake claim in the province up to that point. So over the last century, you know, people have kind of been moving in where the Dwemer once lived, trying to claim that land, and the Ra Gada, being the warriors that they are, you know, kind of trained from childhood to be fighters, they do a really good job of just like kind of sweeping in and taking over the place.
Who are the Rag? I just picture people dressed like Lady Gaga because it sounds like the beginning of that song.
I didn't mention it before. Redguard is a corruption of the Yokudan term Ragada.
Oh, okay. It's Redguard. Yeah. Oh, it's early Redguard. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah exactly. And it's basically the Ragada literally means warrior wave. And it's because these first Yokudans to arrive on the continent were that warrior wave. So they proceeded, and we'll get into it a little bit later about because not all of the Red Guards, the ancient Red Guards, were Ragada.
Okay.
Even though the term Ragada has now come to encompass all modern Red Guards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They were kind of fractured, which we'll get into towards the end of the episode.
I wonder if that's kind of like the historical basis of that would be like the Sea People. Like, because, like, the Bronze Age in human history, there was, like, this, like, wild collapse where multiple civilizations all kind of went down at the same time in the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And all, again, shared legends is, like, of the Sea People, which was, like, some sort of, like, gigantic multiracial army of people who just, like, swept through Mesopotamia and Persia and shit like that. And, like, and set technology back, like, 1,000 years or something. Yeah, the Sea People is wild. I think it's also, like, Plato, the Sea People are, like, part of the basis of like the Atlantis myth, right? Because Plato is the guy who first wrote about he wrote about a fake guy who told him a fake story about Atlantis, and then there was the Sea People, and then
I had to read a lot of Plato in school, and a lot of what he writes is just a dialogue between him and someone who doesn't exist.
Guys, I was playing with Plato when I was like fucking 4 years old. Okay, not that impressive.
If you leave Plato out, it dries.
No, that conversation actually didn't take place with a real human being. Whenever he said that, so it's fake news.
Plato's fake news.
So the Ragada or Red Guards built new cities upon the ruins they'd conquered, and the neighboring Bretons, Imperials, and Nords would long hold a grudge against their claims. Skirmishes continued along the border for decades, until a threat so dire could unify them, at least temporarily.
Aliens.
No. Orcs. So yeah, they like sweep in, they conquer the Bretons, Imperials, and Nords, like I said. Imperials being of Cyrodiil, like the center of the continent. They don't have like a reasonable ethnic name. They're just called, it's just the Whites, I guess.
Yeah, they're the Romans, basically, right?
Yeah. We talked a bit about, so yeah, the Imperials
because
are the
most
Romans.
Of the human races in Elder Scrolls are white, right?
Yeah.
The Nords are Nords, the Bretons are Frenchmen, basically.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Imperials who are like Rome.
The Bretons are cooler than that. So we can talk briefly about the other races without having done any specific research on them, but we know a bit about them collectively.
We did an Argonian episode. Yeah,
it's they're French. They're French white people, and Breton is also the name for a cracker.
I mean, Breton is a place in France too. It's where Britain gets its name
from. It's
from
white crackers.
Oh, that's true.
Bretonia.
Yeah.
I guess the Imperials are the Romans slash eventually kind of like get these English vibes. Nords are very Scandinavian or Northern European. The Bretons, based on French, but they also are, they're mixed blood. So they're like half elves. they're descended from the Ald Mary mixing with humans, early humans.
Cool, yeah. They're my favorite. If I ever play a human in an Elder Scrolls game, I always play a Breton because they're the magically inclined ones. I find them very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the elf blood in them. Like, they, you say whenever you play a human, they're not really human. They're half elf.
They're Métis, to go with the French thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just the quick spark notes on the different races. Okay. They're all playable classes in the Elder Scrolls games for anybody who doesn't know. And these all kind of got, these were all people trying to make pushes into Hammerfell whenever the Dwemer were vanished, until the Red Guards showed up and drove them back. So there's some bad blood between them for sure. There's still some talk in Skyrim. You'll hear about, cause they share a border with Hammerfell. That's this range of mountains. And there's this like, oh, this is actually ours, which also happens a lot with orcs, where orcs will say like, oh, Hrothgar on the western edge of Skyrim, should belong to the orcs because it's actually Hrothgar and all that stuff.
By the way, just a funny note, Saucy posted in memes like Joe Biden fixes Skyrim video while we're recording the Elder Scrolls episode.
Joe Biden brings democracy to Skyrim.
I've seen a lot of these clips on like Instagram reels and stuff, and it's just Joe Biden like in different places like, well, why would you want to steal the thing when he's got the bucket on his head or whatever? Like, it's just right. Joe Biden impressions in Skyrim thing.
Jovakin is a great name. Jovakin.
Yeah.
Well, way to be prescient, Saucy. Way to continue to be prescient. So the Red Guards had conquered these cities. They're setting up home. They're battling on the borders. They're skirmishing on the borders with these different factions until in the province of High Rock, home of the Bretons, there was a festering problem that kind of came to a head. So once upon a time, there was an Ald Mary leader known as Trinimac, who I'm sure we talked about, but I could not find which episode we talked about it on.
It would have been, I think, probably still the dwarf one because... it's Kagranak. Never mind. Excuse me. Kagranak's rules is for the heart. Never mind.
You've had communion crackers.
I want to say it was the Daedra episode, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah. Okay. You've had communion crackers, but why don't you step this up to Trinimac, the first Holy Trinity mac and cheese. and you get a little scoop right from the pasta in the front. That'd be good.
You don't use milk. You use holy water.
Of course.
Yeah.
So there's this Ald Mary leader. The Ald Mary were like ancient elves, of which all elves descended, and the Ald Mary eventually become the High Elves. But all the elf races, including the Dark Elves, the Orcs, are also considered Myr. Yeah, exactly. They all descend from this one race of elf. The Ald Mary are the High Elves that descended from them. Who were probably originally like closest in bloodline, I guess.
One of their leaders, Skyrim, the racial purity bad guy elves are the Ald Mary Dominion, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they're bad guys throughout the series, the Ald Mary Dominion. Like they're always persistently like very eugenics, very, you know, racial superiority, all this stuff.
Yeah, the guy who led the Mythic Dawn, I think, is a high elf as well in Oblivion, whatever his name is. I can't remember.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not gonna remember, but yeah.
Yeah.
They are consistently bad guys, the Ald Mary Dominion.
Yeah.
So one of this Ald Mary leader, not necessarily of the Ald Mary Dominion, of this like racial purity group known as Trinimac, gets devoured by the Daedric Prince Boethia.
Cool.
Nice. It corrupts him into a new Daedric Prince, Malakath.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Because we have an episode about the Daedra. The Daedra, you've definitely talked about that.
And I just control F'd and I couldn't find it in that episode. So I don't know. I don't know where we talked about it. We talked about it somewhere. But
okay. Yeah.
So he's corrupted into the new Daedric Prince Malakath. Peter, you may know. Jamie, do you know what Malakath's deal is?
I do, yeah.
I know how to spell it.
He's the leader of the orcs. He's like the Daedric Prince worshipped by the orcs because the followers of Trinimac were likewise corrupted and became known as Orsimer.
Doesn't he get the two-handed mace that we just talked about in Hammerfell? I thought in Skyrim.
Volendrung's not the mace. The mace is from Molag Bal.
Molag Bal. What's the weapon that you get from Malakath in Skyrim? Because that would be
the one. I think it is Volendrung. It's the hammer.
It is the hammer, right?
It's a hammer that fell. Yeah.
Okay, the hammer that fell. This comes from Malakath. Yeah. Malakath gets a hold of it eventually, yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But I want to say, like, you go to, like, an orc stronghold
Yeah.
Where his thing is, right?
And you talk to him, like, in a cave or something, and you get a... I do remember going to the stronghold, because I did that part on stream during our Extra Life thing, like, years ago when you were still living in Montreal, Ethan, but...
Yeah, I pulled him up. He has a shrine in Fallowstone Cave, as well as altars in various orc strongholds in Skyrim. It's Malakath the Daedric Prince. Yeah, and you get Volendrung from him. Yeah, you get Volendrung from him. It's a spooky-looking hammer. It, like, drains stamina or some shit.
Yeah. So, at some point, this guy Trinimac becomes Malakath, and his followers, people who liked him, get corrupted as well, become known as Orsmer, or Orcs, another playable class in Skyrim.
Yep.
They are...
I love their pass. Sorry, I love their racial in Skyrim. It's fun. You get to go, like, berserking. Take half damage, do double damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
I play a lot of orcs in Skyrim because and Oblivion for that matter, because I'm a big fan of give me big hammer. I run and smash
things. That's yeah.
Yeah, so they don't necessarily have a nation, right? They were kind of spread out. There was, like, followers of Trinimac all over the place. There wasn't, like, a concentrated army necessarily anywhere. So there's just, like, one day all these, like, orcs just kind of, like, chilling, you know? And in some places they're pariahs and they're kind of kicked out and they have to find settlements. In most places they're kind of like that. But they don't have necessarily, like, a home. But one of their biggest concentrations is in northeastern High Rock in the city of Orsinium, which gets founded there. And this is, like, the orcs make a claim on High Rock. Cool. High Rock is interesting. There's a saying, or there was a saying in High Rock once upon a time, like, pre-Daggerfall, which was go find a new hill, become a new king. Because it was, like, so split up into, like, a million fiefdoms and there was no centralized government at all. That, like, anybody could kind of just, like, if you could just, like, be powerful enough and, like, stake your claim, you could just, like, make your kind of kingdom, and, like, nobody was coming to the help of their neighbors.
Yeah, it's the libertarian paradise, right? It's just, like, the province of the sovereign citizen.
Yeah, exactly. Or was at the time. Eventually, after the events of Daggerfall, or maybe before the events of Daggerfall, there's something known as the, oh, man, really testing my memory now. It's, like, the Great Peace or the Great Union or something like that.
Yeah, Daggerfall is about a lich. There's, like, there's a lich that's causing problems in that one.
Yeah, well, basically, like, it becomes, like, there's three main factions in High Rock in, like, modern day Tamriel.
Okay.
Daggerfell is one of them. I don't remember the other two either. But, like, essentially, like, they do get unified under, like, three banners, which is better than how it used to be, which is one event, which we're not going to get to. But anyway, just a little bonus lore for you.
Cool.
So we have orcs in Orsinium, in High Rock, who have kind of spread it out. And like I said, nobody in High Rock was coming to their neighbor's defenses, except it turns out when racism is the driving factor, and there's this new race of orcs who are trying to stake a claim. The orcs, by all accounts, are pretty, like, nasty people. They worship a Daedric Prince. They're definitely killers. They can do double damage while taking half damage. It's pretty OP. Their capital city is now Orsinium, which is in High Rock. So the Kingdom of Daggerfall, one of the many kingdoms of High Rock, allied themselves with the Order of Diagna, which is some of the most formidable warriors of the Ragada. So basically they're like, hey, we have this problem in our country. There's some other factions from High Rock as well, which get involved. I didn't write them down because Daggerfall is one that's recognizable for most people. And they basically reach out to Hammerfell and say, like, hey, this is our problem right now, but it's going to be your problem eventually. Help us out. We'll stop contesting claims for your border. Like, you guys can have your border. You know, the northern city of Sentinel is yours. We'll stop invading, you know, for the future if you guys help us out with this orc problem. So the Ragada, the Red Guards, they send this Order of Diagna, which is really cool. Like, faction of, like, elite warriors from among the Red Guards, essentially.
Okay.
It is rumored, I think this is the third edition book that says this, it's rumored that the cataclysm which befell the continent of Yokuda, that the Ragada were fleeing when they first came to Tamriel, may have been caused by renegade Ansei, which is just, like, the elite of the elite of the Order of Diagna.
Okay.
Called Hiradurge or Hiradurge. So there's this, like, rebel faction. This is a legend, I guess. There's this rebel faction which apparently was, you know, rebelled, I guess you could say. They lost the war in Yokuda, on the other continent that the Red Guards come from. and they were considered masters of stone magic. So they're defeated in first era 792. You guys will recall first era 808 is when Redguards arrive in Tamriel.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So in 792, they lose the war. They exact revenge on the entire continent of Yokuda, or 90% of the continent of Yokuda, by sinking it, essentially.
Okay, so it is Atlantis and the Sea People. It is like the two Platonic legends combined. That's awesome.
Yeah, or like that Tolkien, the
Numenor.
Yeah, Numenor gets sunk. The human place that was granted by the elves.
Yeah, just like that. I haven't watched Rings of Power, so I don't know.
I mean, it's in the Silmarillion, I think. Yeah. Or like,
I haven't read the Silmarillion either.
Oh, dude, okay. He calls himself a lore boy. He hasn't read the Silmarillion. I don't think any of us have read them.
I have not.
I'm not the first seats here, Colin. Calling in your tabs, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So the Order of Diagna in Hammerfell, at the time of the Orsinium Uprising, was run by a fella by the name of Gaiden Shinji, which is just so, like, why make it so Japanese sounding when you're clearly talking about North Africans? I don't know why they went with this name, I gotta admit.
Well, I mean, Masamune is like a sword or like some Japanese guy, and the guy we talked about earlier, like Mansa Musa, the richest man in Africa, or the richest man in history, was an African king. There are like some crossover there, right?
That might just be a coincidence, though.
Yeah, definitely a coincidence.
I don't think those names are related.
Yeah.
And Gaiden Misha, Shinji, like Ninja Gaiden.
I know.
Same with Shinji. That's pretty Japanese.
And Misha Ansuri. What's the guy's name in Periphery? I don't know. It kind of sounds
Misha
like
Mansoor.
Yeah, Misha Mansoor. Yeah, kind of sounds like it, too.
Misha the Electric Lightbulb Mansoor.
Yeah. I'm just trying to give the guy who wrote this fiction a little bit of credit there.
I know why they did it. And it's because he's the first blade master. So the blades that you meet, the Akaviri blades, are like the Secret Service in like Oblivion, and featured prominently in that game. He's the first of the blade masters, which is why I think they gave him a Japanese name. And maybe he was fantasy Japanese and was in North Africa at the time and came to lead this order because they respected Strike more than anything.
Yeah. From being on Discord, I know a lot of people who are fantasy Japanese. But...
so he's the first Blade Master. He's also the founder of the Imperial Arena.
Cool.
Also features in Elder Scrolls Oblivion. He's the leader of this Order of Diagna who's going to help the Bretons in the Siege of Orsinium. The Siege of Orsinium lasted 30 years.
Sheesh.
Before the Alliance managed to crack the Orc defenses and lay waste to the city, bringing the Orsimer dreams of a quote-unquote homeland to a crashing end.
Okay.
Fun fact, because I looked it up, the longest siege in human history, do you guys want to take a guess?
100 years.
It's probably crazier. I would say, I'm going to lowball, but like maybe close, maybe 35 years?
Pete was much closer. It's 26. So it was actually lower than that. But
well, with the orcs, they can just rotate cooldowns, you know, just send out the front line, drop their 50%, then they go back. Yeah. And then, you know, it's like your stalker shields in StarCraft. You just keep the ones with the most defense in the front. Yeah.
Can you imagine being laid siege to for 26 years? Like how much stuff they had stored?
Everybody
that long?
Everybody has eaten like a rat at this point, like after 26 years. Like,
year 24, you're eating your kids. But like to make their half far.
There would have had to be like breaks in the siege and like supplies got through, right? Like you don't last 26 years on stale water. It was the Siege of Ceuta, if anyone wants to look it up. It was between Spain and Morocco, where modern day Spain, if you look at like northern Morocco, like northern.
They're like 100 feet apart. It's the Strait of Gibraltar. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So right south of the Strait of Gibraltar, there's like the city of Ceuta, which is a Spanish city just on Moroccan soil, essentially, which is where this siege took place.
Wow.
Cool. That's a fun fact.
26 years. Jesus.
That's a long time. Yeah. I wouldn't want to be involved with that at all. It just seems either side of it just seems like way too long. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact of the Siege of Orsinium was wider spread than just killing out the orc spirit. It also improved diplomacy for Hammerfell and its neighbors. So again, they said like, hey, we'll stop disputing the border. We'll acknowledge your border and your stake to claim if you help us with Orsinium, which worked. And it worked well in the Redguard's favor, even extending more broadly to you know, the Imperials and the Nords were probably less willing to pick fights with Redguards if they also had the Bretons kind of backing them up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So trade flourishes, borders are opened, and the Ragada even aid their neighbors in other conflicts. They end up aiding the Imperials or the Cyrodiilic Kingdom of Anvil, which is a city you can visit in Oblivion. Mm-hmm. When they fought off the invading beastmen known as Slowed.
Oh, the frogmen.
Yeah. Slowed is a portmanteau of slug and toad.
Oh, I thought it'd be slow and toad. Because I was going to say these are the arch enemies of the Crocmobadil.
So I think I could stretch a whole episode on the Slowed, which I'd be much more interested in doing than third and fourth year at Hammerfell. If you guys, if you listeners want to hear it, if not, if I can't fit just the Slowed, I'll add some other beastmen in there because there are other beastmen in the Tamriel lore, I guess.
Yeah, there's two playable ones, and then we have an episode on the Argonian, but there's also the Khajiit, which are kitty cats, and then there's a bunch of other kind of bizarre beast people all over the place, right?
Yeah, the Slowed are super cool. They're based on like the idea of like sentient coral reefs, which like create the Slowed. Anyway, like would love to go into that. Not going to do it this episode. So crunch at us again. Tweet about the show. You know, we need to get a hashtag 6 years in. We need to get a hashtag going for this thing. But yeah, just if you guys want to hear about that, just tweet at us. Or hop in the Discord.
My buddy Logan was telling me this is. It might be a little old, but if you have Skyrim and if you are alive today, you'd have Skyrim, I guarantee it. There is a fan-made expansion for Skyrim that is like a full like level, and there's like the villain in that is basically like a mob boss Slowed.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, I think so. I've been told about it. I heard it was great. Never played it, but look it up and try and track it down. If you've got the thirst for Skyrim, I've seen people talking about it in Discord. Maybe this is. You know, maybe this will inspire you to ask Ethan to do this episode he already wants to do so that we can then take credit for it.
Playing one mod that is just like a whole ass new continent or something, or like
it's not a mod. That's Ender All the Forgotten Stories, and that is a completely standalone game with completely standalone lore built as a Skyrim mod. So it just uses the Skyrim engine, and it's essentially a mod, but it's I thought that it was going to be like an expansion or a mod, like set in Tamriel at the very least, but it's completely not. It's completely standard, lore-wise.
Interesting.
Anyway, so the Redguards are kind of thriving in this time. They're live, laugh, loving. They tame the harsh desert land using the experience from their native Yokuda, which I guess was also pretty desert-like. They simply transplant their way of life from the destroyed continent to their new continent, including, you know, culture, governance, all that kind of stuff. But eventually change does start to creep in. The Yoku language was gradually replaced by the common tongue of Tamriel, with trade routes now open between nations. It seems silly to keep talking my native tongue.
Yeah, that's
right?
What Quebec's
talk English. God.
Yeah, some of them are Canada's got trade routes going through Quebec. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm
yeah. So we got to stop immigration or using English at the doctor now. Yeah.
We need to get all those exotic New Brunswick spices.
Your doctor's gonna get arrested if you write you a prescription in English, right?
So, yeah.
Oh my god, dude.
So some of the more minor deities of the Yokuden pantheon begin to take on more Tamrielic aspects, whatever that means. Many of the lower class Ragada embraced this change and wanted to assimilate to the new land as much as possible. While the ruling class, known as the Natotambu, like I said before, there's the Ragada, and then there's kind of this Natotambu who we'll talk about in a second. Wanted as much as possible to maintain the status quo. Go figure.
Wow.
The ruling class wants things to remain the same.
Yeah.
Right?
Jeez. Yeah.
So cities along the borders of Hammerfell, such as Sentinel in the north and Rihad in the south, adapted particularly fast to the new cultures, and it happened at a quick enough rate that cracks in the veneer of Yokunity began to show. more on that, though, after the break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Yoku people, known as the Ragada, were changing over time, influenced as they were by the cultures and traditions of a new continent. Amidst all this, two distinct factions emerged, the Crowns and the Forebears. Welcome back from the break, everybody. We were talking about the Ragada, the ancient Red Guards from the First Era, after arriving on Hammerfell, on Tamriel, and how they are schisming into multiple factions, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the emerging influence of different cultures is a definite contributor to the divide, but it certainly wasn't the only one. I have a quote from you guys, for you guys, from the Pocket Guide to the Empire First Edition. Some 3,000 years ago, the continent of Yokuda suffered a cataclysm that sunk most of it into the sea, driving its people towards Tamriel. The build of these refugees landed at the uninhabited, the bulk of these refugees landed at the uninhabited Isle of Hearn, while the rest continued on to the mainland. This vanguard warrior wave of Yokudans, the Ragada, swept on into the country, quickly slaughtering and enslaving the beastfolk and Nidic villages before them, bloodily paving the way for their people who waited at Hearn, including the Na Totambu, their kings and ruling body. So I referenced it earlier in the podcast, and I know longtime listeners of the show are surely thinking right now, here goes Ethan again about the class divide. but if you don't like it, tell the writers of popular fiction to stop drawing on fucking real world experience.
Yeah.
To create your fucking fantasy worlds. I referenced it earlier on, but it's essentially like the Ragada that the name Red Guards derives from, that references all modern Red Guards, is derived from this front wave of warriors who specifically fought and died for the ruling class, who hung back and just kept control of things on this like original island.
Well, everyone's got to play their role, right? Like the warriors got a war, and rulers got a rule. So
yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
what's a king to a god, right? So we have this divide between groups of people, with the fringe groups who come to be known as the Forebears, or the fringe groups. I mean, the people like closer to the borders and, you know, more exposed to multiculturalism. We're saying like, hey, authoritarian rule is kind of shit, honestly.
Oh, those kind of fringe lunatics. I see.
Exactly. They come to be known as the Forebears, being much more adaptable to this new culture, while the ruling class, the Crowns, are much more resistant to it.
Yeah, okay.
So in the year 862 of the Second Era, nearly three millennia after the Yoku peoples first landed in Tamriel, the province is plunged into civil war when the ruler, High King Thassad II, dies of natural causes. I reference the timeline because I've mentioned it before. Fantasy writers, 1,000 years is too long.
Yeah.
It's too long for it to bridge any two events. Like, you can't, you know, like, they're not the Yoku people anymore. They're not the Red Guards anymore. They're just they're completely different. But
yeah,
I had that same problem with Skyrim. Skyrim is 200 years after Oblivion, and nothing has changed. And it does not make any sense at all, whereas at least like Morrowind and Oblivion are like 5-6 years apart, so it makes sense that everyone is still like banging rocks together and fighting with swords. And 200 years later, nothing.
What was happening?
Not crossbows. They don't even have fucking crossbows yet.
Yeah, I mean, you get them. You get them in the fucking Dawnguard expansion.
Yeah. What was happening in for us 200 years ago? What I'm trying to think of, like, what's left over from 200 years ago?
They invented trains.
Is that
Canada
right?
Canada did not exist.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Holy.
Canada didn't exist as a sovereign state. The landmass did.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's maybe a disingenuous example where progress exploded at the Industrial Revolution, which happened at the end of the 19th century, right?
Right.
But
like, in the Dark Ages, what changes over 200 years?
3,000 years is like is huge.
That's
right.
A lot.
Like that's the Dark Ages. That's the Dark Ages to like early Egypt, you know what I mean? Like that's like before Plato, before, you know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, 3,000 years is too long for, because definitely the people who, the Ragada who showed up, were using the identical technology to the people who we are talking about now, yeah, 3,000 years later, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which is like, it's whatever. We're definitely splitting hairs. I love to harp on it because it is like, somebody tweeted about it once, and I was just like, damn, you're right. And it's the, what is it? Not Bader-Meinhof. Frequency bias, where you just like, once you recognize something, once you know about something, you spot it everywhere in the wild.
Yeah, the yellow bug thing. It's like, when you get a yellow bug, you see the yellow bugs everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So just like, now I see it. Anytime I'm doing this lore, I'm like, 3,000 years, guys? The fuck are you talking about? Why'd you make it so long?
Maybe. Well, at least I can Tolkien.
Crush the, more the, in, you know?
Yeah. The millennia in Tolkien like have like legendary timelines of like angels and demons to like people who live for 6,000 years, and they talk about how shit's changed so much, mm-hmm. despite the fact like, yeah, sure, like Hobbiton doesn't have electricity, but like it's not that in what we're talking about now. It's still just like, yeah, man, 3,000 years of relative peace and stability, and no one tried to change anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like those old wounds would have either like erupted into war already, or they would have just like died down and things.
No one
like,
would have remembered them, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's like now if you knew an Egyptian person who had like some sort of like beef with
exactly.
Yeah, like some kingdom that doesn't
exist anymore. And said, and things were still Egypt, and they were just like what the fuck? Well, like you know, now I'm mad about what Pharaoh said.
We're all still mad that we didn't get to meet that queen, though. Who's the really hot Egyptian that started all the wars? Cleopatra. Yeah.
I don't think she started a bunch of wars.
She was not 3,000 years old. Cleopatra was born closer to the opening of the first Pizza Hut than she was born to the building of the pyramid.
Yeah, she's from the Ptolemaic dynasty as well. She's like from like
that could just mean Pizza Hut. Could just mean Pizza Hut's really old, so I don't know. that's the classic Pizza Hut bias.
Fair. Once you build the first Pizza Hut, you start seeing them everywhere, right?
Like, yeah.
I love that joke so much, Jamie, because I almost tried to refute you, and then was like, why am I trying to prove him wrong on this one?
No, Jamie.
No, Jamie. Italy didn't get fucking tomatoes until the 17th century. Okay? So it can't be that old.
I got pizza box right next to me. I ate 5/8 of a pizza after going to the bar last night, but not Pizza Hut. Oh, good. Not a lot of Pizza Hut around here. But
you got pizza. No. Pizza.
They're coming back. Pizza Hut's making a resurgence in Canada.
I've heard that.
Pizza Hut bought out all the double pizzas.
That's true. There is one across the street that I've never been to.
Because we have like, oh, they're making a resurgence. Oh yeah, there's one across the street.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, like, my eyes just ricochet off it, right? Like, clearly.
It's funny because we have Pizza, which is like all across Canada or whatever, and then we have Double Pizza, which was only Quebec, which is clearly just Pizza, but said a different way. But
I mean, to be fair, Pizza was the Little Caesars mascot slogan. He would say Pizza.
Well, that's not very a clever one.
Yeah, and you would recognize him because his rival Mark Anthony was banging Cleopatra.
Yeah, exactly.
if you group up with Little Caesar, then you can enslave Benny later in the game if you want.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. I think that was in the bonus. Editors cut, like ripping a pizza apart on the steps of the Senate.
he says, "Courier." So we've got 862, second era, High King Thassad II. The High King of the Red Guards dies of natural causes. The Forebears take this opportunity to take some power back. They make a play at control of at least their own tribal districts. So at least like Sentinel and Rihad, they say like, we're claiming these in the name of the Forebears. We're no longer Red Guards. You know? And I think the 3,000 years does a good job explaining like, they're no longer like that warrior wave necessarily, where like all the warriors were of this group. Plenty of the crowns are pretty capable at fighting. So the civil war is pretty messy. Prince Ator, the son of Thassad, does not make it easy for the Forebears. He leads the crown forces against the rebels, using his own superior resources, positioning, because they're kind of like clumped up in the middle of the country, while the other groups are kind of like at the fringe. So it's like, we've got you surrounded, but not with many people, right? They've got the numbers. They've got the positioning. They kind of... They're crushing the rebellion when a deal is made. The Forebears, with their backs against the wall, did what they were known to do. They turned outside of Hammerfell. The continent at this point is broken into many, many very small factions. Most regions you may know from the game were merely small kingdoms who all share borders. Skyrim is the easy example to go to because, like Peter said, you have one. If you don't know you own a copy of Skyrim, you do own a copy of Skyrim.
Yeah, you do.
I own the regular edition of Skyrim and the special edition of Skyrim, and I never bought the special edition of Skyrim. It just showed up in my Steam one day. I have no idea from where. I have all the DLCs, and I got it someday, and I don't know where from. I have
a long-lost copy of Skyrim on an old Steam account. I have it on PlayStation. I have it on PlayStation VR. And the one that I got from my old one is, like, I was talking to when Skyrim just came out, I was talking with someone at a bar because I'd watched streams. And he's like, oh, you should bring your laptop over. We'll play together. And he's like, then I was like, oh, well, I don't actually have the game because I can't afford it right now. And he smacked $40 in my hand. He's like, you go home and you buy Skyrim. I think I've told this story before, but I did. True to my word, I went home and I bought Skyrim. It was on sale for $40. And shout out to you, Ziggy.
I've heard this story before, but it's a very good story. So Skyrim, for example, I mean, you know, there's Markarth, there's Whiterun, there's, you know, all these different cities or whatever. It wouldn't have been Skyrim, like a unified Skyrim. It would have just been like these kind of like different little city factions.
Well, there's like some guy, there was like, I don't remember his name. There was some like legendary figure who unified Skyrim, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The Nobunaga of the Vikings, basically.
Exactly. We're pre-unification, Skyrim unification, we're pre-unification of pretty much any of the right. nations that you know. The only exception at the time is the Isles of Elsewhere. The Eldmeri Dominion is making moves with the High Elves and forming like a rather big nation of multiple nations, and the Imperials of Cyrodiil. So for a long time they've been ruled by Akaviri potentates. Potentate is a name for like just an absolute monarch, like an authoritarian ruler essentially. And the Akaviri are like they're from a different continent, the continent of Akavir. They came here for kind of unknown reasons. They're really like cloaked in mystery, kind of pseudo humans.
Are they the samurai sort of styled ones? Because I know like the katanas are all like Akaviri blades, and then like the blades themselves are like a combination of like Red Guard warriors with Akaviri gear, right? Which you've got the katana and the kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but like the like lateral slats of iron armor, right? Kind of like a samurai would have.
So really, really not much is known about them. So they built they invaded Tamriel at some point. They built Skyhaven Temple, mm-hmm. I think it's called, which is in Skyrim. But it is that styling, which the fact that the guy's name is Gaijin Shinji, who led the Order of Dianga, I'm not even going to remember what it is right now. Diagna, excuse me. The fact that he was named Gaiden Shinji, I think, supports your claim that he was that, because he was the first blade master, right? And the fact that the blades are so like wield Akaviri katanas, I think is like a good little like what do we call it, lore voice canon. That these were
you forgot.
Sorry, it's not a lot of sleep these days, guys. Okay, so we'll say lore boys canon. You know, the Akavir were Japanese. If you go to the wiki page, like it's we don't really know much about them. We don't have any pictures of them. There's like a picture of a ghost. In the Akavir, like the blades armor, essentially, it looks like very blazy and it's very like samurai esque. But we don't know anything about, like, they're fantasy samurai, but we don't know much about them beyond that. But they did invade Tamriel at some point. They had done very well. They installed these potentates who kind of ruled over Cyrodiil. So, like, central, the Rome area where the Imperials are. Throughout the second era, they're ruled by these potentates until the last of them, an Akaviri named Severian Chorak, was assassinated, leaving the province in like quite the mess, with just like there's no rule of law. You know, the last potentate's dead. They try to invade again, but it's like I was reading about it today. There's like something that happens in Morrowind at the same time, and it like distracts them long enough that they get beat back.
I think there's a war in Cyrodiil you get to play out as a battleground in ESO. And you have to like storm like this one circular building in the center, but it's like a huge, huge map. Like it, you can take your horse and
you have to storm the Imperial City because you've got the White Gold Tower in the middle, right?
I think so, yeah. But then there's like all those things, like you have to get all your resources in line first so you can build your tanks to get in. And the map is massive. Like it takes you 15 minutes to run from one side to the other on your mount. Yeah, just like huge scale battle.
The Imperial City wouldn't have been built yet, I don't think. Like this is pre that.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll say like, because the Imperial City was built by Tiber Septim as the seat of Imperial power, right?
Wasn't the White Gold Tower built by like the Aeliad or something? Like it was already there? I don't remember.
Yeah, I believe the tower was. I don't think the city was.
Yeah. So many towers and across our episodes. I'm like, wasn't that built by a bunch of rats for some guy and when it rang new? Yeah, I don't know.
wasn't it built by a dragon out of human bones or something?
Yeah, exactly. I don't remember.
Yeah, all to say, like, the continent is kind of in disarray at this point, and so Hammerfell, the forebears, are turning outside of the province to try and gain aid in their fight against the crown. So amongst these petty squabbles, one general in particular was making a name for himself, Tiber Septim, sometimes known as Talos.
Right.
For those who don't know, Talos is like, he's a god, big air quotes, in Skyrim, where some people, particularly humans, worship him as a god. But a lot of the other races, in particular, the Aldmeri Dominion, say like, no, he absolutely is not. Only elves are gods. And so he's considered like the 13th divine, where normally like the traditional pantheon is 12. And he was a mortal human man known as Tiber Septim.
Yeah.
So the forebears
have it that he like ascended to godhood for being so cool and such a good, like an awesome warrior, right? He was like granted godhood by Akatosh, who is like the god of time.
Yeah, exactly. That's the claim. This isn't the Tiber Septim episode, but all to say he does feature in this story, I guess. Mm-hmm. The forebears reach out to this upstart general who had conquered much of Cyrodiil at this point. He promised to help in their fight against the crowns as long as the forebears would swear fealty to the Septim Empire when all was said and done. So, hey, sell your soul and I'll help you with your ascension.
Yeah. I'll help you kill those guys if I can get your taxes afterwards.
And yeah.
Exactly. Sounds good.
Exactly. A deal with the devil made, the combined forces of the forebears and the Imperials crushed the crown forces, taking control of mainland Hammerfell. Prince Ator and his remaining forces fled to the island fortress of Stros Mackay to regroup.
That's where Redguard takes place.
That is where Redguard takes place. A lot, pretty much the rest of what we're going to talk about happens in the game of the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard.
How about you visit the island of Suck Macaque?
Nice.
Instead of Stroke Macaque?
Yeah, I was gonna go Stroke. Yeah, probably better Stroke.
Yeah, it's really more of a foreplay island fortress, I think. So yeah,
yeah.
Stros Mackay.
only over the clothes stuff on.
Yeah.
Over your jeans, your Levi and Stros, whatever.
Levi Stros Mackay.
Yeah.
Stroke my Levi and Stros Mackay.
Yeah. Tiber Septim's corduroy armies had like gotten the crowns out. They had to wear jeans at sea.
Awesome.
I have not played Redguard because I never thought I could. It was not for sale anywhere and wasn't free along with Arena and Daggerfall. So until it hit Game Pass like a month and a half ago, it was impossible to get. So I had watched a little bit of gameplay of it. And just Stros Mackay is a cool name. I just like it just stuck with me.
Yeah.
I also recognize it as the first game. The voice actor for the main guy ended up being the voice actor for like most Red Guards in Morrowind and Oblivion, because there was like racial actors basically. They'd hire one person to do male, female for every race.
There is a version on Steam, apparently. I'm looking at it right now. It's $8.49 Canadian, probably like $6 American.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass too,
and it looks good. It looks like they upscaled the texture.
Cool.
But reviews are mixed.
Add that to my play later.
Prince Ator falls back to this island of Stros Mackay, which you can see if you look at a map of Tamriel, it usually will show you where Stros Mackay is. It's just off the coast of Hell, essentially. He retreats with his forces there after being decimated by Tiber Septim and the forebears who were fighting with him. And there's this battle called the Battle of Hunding Bay. That the forces got to display, the defending forces, the crown forces, got to display their Ragada roots, And it looks like they're gonna win. There, it's a naval battle in a bay out off of the coast of Shores Mackay, and they're doing really, really well. They're poised to beat the Imperial Navy and maybe just like put an end to this whole friggin' invasion thing. When a poisoned arrow loosed by a Dunmer assassin,
who's
like one of the big like antagonist figures in the game, Rhaegard.
Oh, okay.
Strikes Prince Ator. So he, essentially, like, it's going good, and then the prince gets shot, the leadership falls into disarray, a dragon shows up.
and then dragon says, Ra, go da! Right? Yeah, yeah. They would say something like that, yeah, and then Imperials go flying. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was reading, like, the story of what happened in Rhaegard, and it's, like, it's so, like, disjointed in, like, that it's, like, yeah, they were winning. And then an arrow hits the prince, and you're like, okay, yeah, that would affect momentum in a battle for sure. The prince is dead. People are going to be like, what are we fighting for? All this stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but also a dragon then shows up and just like burns the entire defender's like navy, just like burns all their ships. I'm like, well, why couldn't they could have just sent him out to begin with? No.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're a dragonborn, you can't even fucking. I mean, you can't kill a dragon in Skyrim, of course, because their souls just like transfer to new bodies. But like. Without a dragonborn, like, you can't even fucking stop it. Like,
yeah.
Because Tiber Septim is a dragonborn or something too, right? Or no, Mirak is the first one. Never mind.
Yeah, so he, Tiber Septim can control dragons.
Okay.
I didn't actually look into it, but Nafa Alilargus, quite the name. He's got five other names, which I'm not going to attempt because they're all pretty much the same thing with an added R or an added apostrophe.
All right.
Okay.
He's a red dragon, loyal soldier of Tiber Septim. So he's a thrall of the Empire. He calls himself the proud jewel of the Imperial Crown.
Cool.
He's considered to be not as noble or intelligent as the rest of his race.
Duh.
So he burns the remaining Redguard ships, the defending Redguard ships, crushes any hope. Of last hopes of them retaining their sovereignty, basically just like, okay. Yeah, by the way, we also have a dragon, so he's just gonna show up and destroy your navy, and then we're gonna take over your last bastion, essentially. The emperor installs Emperor Septim installs imperial garrisons across the province in each of Hammerfell's cities, then installs governors to rule it as an imperial vassal. So he's like, yeah, you know, job's done. Thank you, Forebears. You're now part of the Empire, which the Forebears kind of wanted. They were kind of like, we're accepting of other cultures. They probably wanted to be their own, like unique Hammerfell, like who also, you know, wasn't under the thumb of the crowns, I guess.
Yeah.
But in the end, like driven to the brink of defeat, they were just like, okay, well, yeah, we'll just be Imperials if it means we don't have to be under the same rulers and or admit that we were wrong the whole time, right? Now it's an imperial state. It doesn't last long, though. It lasts like a year and a half, maybe.
Oh, it doesn't last 3 millennia until someone like, starts some fucking beef again?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, it's 3 millennia or it's like the very next year.
Yeah.
But I think it's the very next year because it, like, I think all this takes place in the game. I think the Battle of Hunting Bay takes place towards the beginning of Redguard.
Okay.
And then this next bit takes place at the end of Redguard. A Redguard mercenary named Cyrus, who is the protagonist in Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, slays Nafa Alilagus. I'm gonna paste this for you guys, and you guys can tell me how you
Snuffleupagus.
Okay. Oh, wait. Pretty good,
yeah, probably. Yeah.
Let me check.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Because I was expecting way more punctuation. This is all one. Block.
Just one big word.
I'd say
Nephalilagus, yeah.
Nephalilagus, yeah.
There's, yeah. Or it's like Nepha, and then his rap name is Lil Agus, right?
Lil Agus, yeah. Nepha, Lil Agus. That's a good way to remember. Nephalilagus.
Yeah, like little anus that you can make diamonds out of.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just do your Keegans. Just do your Keegans. Everybody practice your Keegans and strike from that pelvic floor. So Cyrus, this mercenary, slays Nafa Lilanus, goes on to kill the governor imposed on Stros Mackay, a man who is known as Emil Rectum.
Rectum.
Yep, good.
Rectum, damn near killed him. Diver Septim is forced to sue for peace. Stretched thin as he was by other conflicts on the continent, he doesn't have time to devote his army solely to Hammerfell, especially right. like the furthest reach of Hammerfell, essentially. Like, you got to walk all the way across the Alkyr Desert and then like sail to this island out in the middle of nowhere. So he sues for peace. The Empire allows Hammerfell to reinstate the government and keep many of their traditions, and agrees to pull his forces out of the province, so no more garrisons armies. Though Hammerfell does remain a part of the Cyrodiilic Empire.
Right.
So they are, you know, part of the Empire, I guess, and part of the Imperial. Cyrus would go down as a legend among the Red Guards, and Hammerfell joining the Empire would happen right as the continent is launched into the Third Age. So to end us off, I have a quote to kind of wrap up everything that we talked about here.
Cool.
This is again from the Pocket Guide to the Empire, Third Edition. The division in Hammerfell society was not mended by joining the Empire, even to this day. In general, northern Hammerfell continued to be traditionally Yokuden in style, dress, and personality, and then the southern lands, where the forebears landed, tended to be more cosmopolitan. But in truth, Hammerfell was and is a patchwork with conflicting traditions nestled side by side.
Hmm. Cool.
And that's all the lore for Elder Scrolls 6. Elder Scrolls 6 lore. search engine optimization, Elder Scrolls 6. This is the Elder Scrolls 6 episode of the Lore Boys. Lore Boys Elder Scrolls 6 on Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter
6. I do hope it is true, actually, because after Morrowind was a very cool fantasy land, and then Oblivion and Skyrim were European fantasy, if they're not going to do a Beastman area or like one of the wacky elven ones, the only non-European like human race country I think would be a great place to set a game, if only so the artists can like flex their muscles a little bit, because like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's, I still love the games, don't get me wrong, but like, it's a fantasy setting, and the fact that we got two human provinces in a row, human European ones in a row, is just like,
yeah,
really?
So Dwemer, where they went missing is the Red Mountains?
During the Battle of Red Mountain, but they didn't go missing, they left existence, right? They don't exist at all anymore. Like, yeah,
if you want to learn more about it, you should listen to this great little podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember it being very mysterious, though, and I'm wondering if we're going to learn any more within Hammerfell if that were to happen.
I doubt it.
No,
okay. I mean, maybe we'll almost certainly learn more, but it won't be definitive. Like, we won't get like, here's the whole story of what happened. You know what I mean? Like, if anything, they'll sprinkle little bits and pieces. But Morrowind was definitely like where we got the most that I think we'll ever. Like the biggest.
Yeah, because like characters who were there when it happened are pivotal to the story of Morrowind. Right? Like, they got her.
Yeah.
Right. You the heart of Lorcan, which did it, is like the last boss.
Yeah. Exactly. True. Yeah. Yeah. So. That's Elder Scrolls lore. I'm with you, Pete. I think Hammerfell would be cool. We've talked about it before. I'd prefer Black Marsh. You know, I'd prefer to go to Beastman.
Yeah.
Let's go to fucking one of the sentient coral reefs under the sea and do a fucking slowed Elder Scrolls. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Mostly,
it's not gonna happen. So,
well, I don't really mind what the setting is. I just hope, like, it's hard to have the same impact as Skyrim, but like, I just hope it's a good game. You know, I hope it's really fun. I hope that it's well executed. Expected it to be a little busted. There's going to be some fun bugs, but what's a Bethesda game without some fun bugs, right?
I'm totally fine with bugs. I hope it doesn't feel too much like Skyrim, because I'm personally like burnt out on Skyrim for sure, and I imagine a lot of people are, and I think that's a big reason why there's been so many delays. At the same time, re-releasing it on every fucking platform is not helping you in that regard.
Yeah.
No, Bethesda.
But there's also, like, if I talk to, I don't feel this, but I talk to you two, open world, what were you guys saying? Like, fatigue, I guess? Like,
yeah.
People, a lot of folks don't want open worlds anymore, and what's an Elder Scrolls game if it's not open world?
Depends. No, like,
Six is not coming out for fucking years. But, like, there's Ubisoft open world and a lot of stuff like that. And then there's, like, a good video game that happens to be big as
I love The Witcher 3. I didn't like Horizon. You know, like, I think there is a type of open world which I like, which, like, they make a new, like, Elder Scrolls 6, when it comes out in 10 years, I definitely play it, and I will like the open world aspects because I like the exploration. which I felt was lacking in Horizon, for example, where it feels more like you're going to like additional places and like you're learning little bits of lore, but a lot of it is just like way more menial. Whereas there's like a charm to Skyrim where like you're walking through Falkreath and a dog walks up to you and starts talking. You're like, what the fuck's your deal?
Also, and I think to your point, exploration, like in Fallout and Skyrim, you can pick a direction and you'll have cool things that happen. You never know what might happen, but Horizon, it is the exclamation marks on the screen. You're like, okay, quest that way. I know exactly where I need to go. There's no surprises.
Although like, the first time I played Skyrim, I straight up thought that the rebellion, like the Imperial versus the Stormcloaks, was like the main story, and like played through that storyline first, and then was like, oh, I gotta go to this place called like High Hrothgar. Like, what is that? You know? And then find out that like I did not do the main story. I just like got to level 20 without unlocking my second shout, you know?
I love Horizon, by the way. It's just different. It for sure
is. It is different.
I bought the second one today. But I do think that Horizon, at least if we're going to go on this like end of episode tangent about open worlds, there are good and bad aspects of an open world game, right?
Yeah.
There is the all check marks, all icons, checklist bullshit that Horizon does suffer a bit from.
But it's
But there's just enough actual good shit in there for it to just be like, I did not collect all the coffee mugs and metal flowers, because that's some Ubisoft trash. But fighting mechanical monsters with a bow and arrow is rad, and the story's cool too, right?
If you want to do that stuff, it's like so easy to do, though. Like, it's fast. I 100%ed Horizon in like, what, like 5-6 days? Like,
they don't make it. You had platinumed it the following Friday.
I think it's the same reason why you like MMOs. It's like the small check boxes. It's like, I think I would have really liked Horizon if it was an open world and was a linear story. Like, I just said, like, go to this vault, like explore that vault. Like, I think I would have loved exploring them and like finding the secrets in like a much more linear, much more confined space.
But, okay.
I don't think Elder Scrolls games fall into the same.
I experienced Horizon differently too. Like, I experienced it on launch, like when I didn't know the story, and you played it much later, you already knew the story. So there wasn't that cool, like the floor drops out and you're like, whoa, this is the world I'm in. And
I mean, also for Horizon, when I played it, like, to be fair, I'm like way more on Ethan's side about the open world stuff. Cause it took me a year and a half to finish Horizon Zero Dawn. Right.
Okay.
Cause it's just like every once in a while, it would just be like, do something cool. And it's just like, now waste your time. It's like the game was constructed to be 30 hours long and not necessarily have 30 hours of content, right? Sort of thing. But anyway.
I disagree. I think it's
a good game. It wasn't for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it was good. It was well built. The combat felt cool. But it just...
And that pivot, dude, they've made Killzone before that. How you go from, like, Killzone to making, like, such a cool overworld game? Well, anyways.
Hey, Killzone rules, too. Anyway.
Yeah, it does rule, but it's just so different. Like, imagine, like, having to program a shooter versus having to program, like... anyways, I don't know how that all works, but there is a cool... what's that? Noclip or whatever documentary on it?
Danny O'Dwyer, baby. He's one of my heroes.
Yeah. Anyways. So if you guys like the show, like our rants, also like Elder Scrolls, please tweet about us. Let people know. Spread the good word of Lore Boys if you guys can. We'd super appreciate it. It's the best way to grow the show is for you guys to tell one person. You know, if everybody tells one person they know, then we double in a week, essentially. Talk about us when you can, when it makes sense. And we'd super appreciate it if you want to leave us a review on iTunes. I know iTunes really, really caters to the reviews. So you can leave us a 5-star there. It'd really help the show as well.
It's kind of cool, too. I think, like, I noticed this especially after we got that Elden Ring bump. Like, it kind of continues for a little bit, because if people like us, we have almost like 300 episodes or whatever now. So like that one friend you tell is like 300 downloads for us, which is really cool.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So, you know, just 300 downloads times our number of listeners times two. Like, we're getting into the hundreds of millions of downloads or something like that.
We might hit a milli before the end of the year. Maybe early 2023.
Yeah, I think early next year, we're going to get it. Yep.
Do that stuff if you like the show. Peter, is there anything happening on the Instagram front these days?
Yeah, at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. If you want to read 5 pages of my comic that I've been working on for a while, they're all there. You can also go to squaredidea.com if you want to read it that way, but some of the feedback that they've allegedly received about their website is that it's not so user-friendly. So, yeah, at Loreboys Podcast, there's 5 pages of my comic available right fucking now. Because we're recording on day 3, and I've got 2 more days of one page a day, and that's going to be Tuesday. So there you go.
Check it out. And Jamie, who's clearly fed up with the show and is standing up and walking around his apartment.
My mic setup today was just like a little too short, so I kept having to like condense my back to be in the right spot. So I'm standing up just to stretch out my back.
Jamie's stretching out. Jamie's doing some yoga. I hope everyone listening to this is gonna stretch and walk around a bit.
On your forklift, just stand up, get off, and stretch.
Yeah, I got up in the middle to do a couple twists there, but anyways. Yeah, just get in the Discord. That's where most of us are hanging out. There's new people all the time. You get to see stuff that other parts of the community might not see. You get to be on the inside track. You could be a lurker. You could play along. Whatever you like. But the Discord link is below. So just check that out. There's a bunch of cool people in there.
Yeah, hop in the Discord and come chat with us. It's great. If you guys want to hear more Elder Scrolls, there's a lore request channel. Again, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/The Lore Boys, which gets you access to exclusive channels on said Discord. We'll get you access to the loser titles, to you know, some shout outs at the top of the episode, like we've been doing recently. All that cool stuff. So if you want to be called Kegel instead of Keegan, you guys know where to come. patreon.com/The Lore Boys, baby.
It's all said with love, by the way. I know it's happened in the past where we make a joke and it doesn't land as well as we'd like it to, but we love all the support.
Yeah, if you don't like it, just call Jamie Clitoris.
Aw, man, you'll never find me. I'm out of here.
Of course, you guys don't touch Patreon. We do have an age-old service called Lore Boys Prime, which is actually about 3,000 years old at this point. We've never iterated on it. It's still the exact same as it was when we first got introduced. And this week we are building a corduroy army, of course, nice. Which we are recruiting for. We are planning on invading North Africa, not expecting it to go well, but we are in need of people with very strong pelvic floors. So if you think that you might just be ready to enlist in the Lore Boys Corduroy Army, just tweet at us the number of Kegels you can do in a row without taking a rest. And we have an undisclosed benchmark that if you hit it, you're in, baby. We'll give you a gun. We'll give you a gun and a uniform and send you off on your merry little way.
You can do
that. Lore Boys are taking back Carthage, baby. It's going to be ours.
You know, just like listening to Lore Boys on a forklift, your manager cannot stop you from doing Kegels at work. You can just do them whenever you like.
Exactly. Yeah. OSHA recommends it. I think that would cost you a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Yeah, my friend who has a kid that's like one, maybe getting close to two, he's like, oh, fuck, dude, I can't finish this dungeon in WoW. I'll be back on tonight. We can try it again later. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. I'll be on for 12 hours. I was just trying to.
If you don't take the time, you don't get the time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And then you type that down.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.